recording these sessions. How are you doing that? Like, I think something that might be helpful is to be able to feed the audio to like a Discord audio channel so the Namer community can all listen in as well.
Yeah, it is possible. I'm just literally have a microphone against my iPad. That's
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To my laptop.
So I can definitely do the same.
Okay.
Thanks.
Sure, man.
Yeah, and I think Elvin last week was running basically an audio recording app doing basically the same thing, but was simultaneously recording it within another app. So, but yeah, I love the idea of streaming that directly into the Discord. That's a great idea, Johnny.
Cool. Yeah, gonna set that up.
Awesome. We'll plan on that for next week. And Mike, thank you for continuously recording these. I have a backlog of the MP3s or audio files that I need to get uploaded to a D-Link or something else here. But while we're letting people filter in here, does anyone have anything to share throughout the week? I mean, it looks like stats are blowing up at Namebase. Shortest month of the year, and it looks like it's just head and shoulders above January. That's huge.
Yeah, it's been crazy. I think the entire NFT space is kind of blowing up. But interestingly, you know, a lot of people in the NFT space aren't really even aware of Handshake. You know, a lot of those NFT trackers don't even track Handshake, even though if it was tracked, it'd be like a top 5, definitely top 10 chain, both by the market cap of HNS and also by the, you know, trading volume of the names. So it seems to be really a lot of it's just driven by organic growth from the Handshake community, which is really cool. But that's been really interesting to see just like how much the entire ecosystem has grown this month alone.
Yeah, I checked the, and I saw you guys post that, and I checked the stats myself. It would put Namebase in a top 5 for, I mean, at least based on the one-day volume or a couple-of-day volume of sales, it would put us in the top 5 of NFTs for the space. Granted, there's a pretty, if I recall correctly, there was a pretty gap between the number 5 and number 4 spot, but even still, like, yeah, considering that that's not even a narrative that we had really been going for, that it's pretty crazy to think about. Especially with as I was looking at the stats page, it looks like the top auctions of all time, something like 60 or 70% of the top auctions of all time were single character letters. But now within the last 24 hours, it's been 60 or 70% have been emoji, and even of the top sales, marketplace sales of all time, at least half have been single character emoji. So I think that it seems that the market's really starting to view those as really on par, at least the official Puny Code ones, as being on par with the single character domains, and that's been really encouraging to see, because that's been something that I've just been geeking out over pretty much since I learned about them. I think they're super fun, and there's a lot of potential there to play with context. So I'm happy to see that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's interesting just because, you know, Handshake names are really unique because it's not just like a normal domain name, right? It's like, it's also a top level domain name. So there's another dynamic of, oh, you know, the same as a standalone domain might be really useful, but also as like a TLD, it might be useful. Or maybe, you know, the name that's great as a TLD isn't great as like a standalone name. But then even past that, when you start to think about other use cases that are possible, you know, like the decentralized login or even other social applications, you know, the more use cases there are, the more that the namespace, you know, the higher a percentage of the namespace becomes valuable. And they become valuable for different reasons and different use cases. And it's like, you can't actually really predict all of the emergent use cases. And so, you know, you're kind of economically rewarded if you can see the trends and see where the technology is going and what's kind of developing in the space and kind of, you know, get ahead of that and get into it. So it's super interesting.
Yeah, I was glad that I caught kind of that trend early on. The current emoji sales are definitely too rich for my blood right now. So I'm glad I got some, there was still some uncertainty of how that would play out. Although I know that there's also been an increase in kind of speculation into some of the like alt emojis or Unicode. And there was actually a, I don't know how many people have been involved with those, but there was an announcement or email this morning regarding that and how they render on the site. And Tiashen, could you touch on that a bit as to, you know, what happened with that and how you see that evolving moving forward?
Yeah, totally. And I'll just touch on this briefly now and then maybe just make a mental note. We can touch on it again, just because I think it's useful to get more members from the community to be aware of the potential issue and then also just kind of how we're thinking about it and, you know, provide a chance for people to share their own thoughts. But effectively, something that we noticed was that there were a lot of these alt emojis where the Puny Code renderer that we used was a more expansive renderer where the browsers would support a more limited subset of those Puny Code emojis. And so not all of the ones, the Puny Code names that were being purchased were actually compatible with browser rules. And it was really interesting. We kind of realized we needed to move fast because we were still kind of debating and figuring out what would be the best way to kind of address the issue. You know, maybe we show some warnings, maybe we have some different filters. But basically, you know, because everything in the marketplace grew so much this month, like it really, even though it's a shorter month, right, it's like the growth has just blown the previous months out of the water. Because of that, like every hour that we waited, there are more and more of these names being purchased. And so we didn't know whether the people purchasing these names actually knew what they were buying, right? Because the front end just renders a Puny Code as an emoji. And so you have to kind of do your own research there. And that's kind of the theme of crypto, is to do your own research. But our goal at Namebase is always to kind of provide some guidance and at least provide, you know, a notice of some sort of, hey, you know, this is a different kind of name. You should just be aware of that. You know, look into it if you're interested, et cetera. But basically, we realized that in order to make sure that we wouldn't have to cover a huge amount of refunds, because what we wanted to do was make sure that if someone purchased a name without realizing it wouldn't necessarily be supported in browsers, that they would have the opportunity to actually go and get a refund. And we wanted to cover that out of pocket, just because we kind of thought that that was the right thing to do. But the every hour that we waited, the expense got more and more and more. I think by the time we sent out that email and made the update, it was about like 160,000 HNS in terms of the total number of those alt emojis that were purchased. So, you know, being on the hook for that, that's around, what is it, like $50,000. And so at that point, it's like, oh man, this is like really, really expensive for us to cover. And the longer we wait, you know, it actually starts to hurt a lot. So what we did was we deployed that change to only render the browser compatible Puny Code names. Immediately, we sent out an email to everyone that was affected by that. And then now we're exploring, you know, better options to support those alt emojis, just because, you know, there is something interesting there. And I think there's an interesting case where they're kind of like the Dogecoin of the hashing names. But I'll just kind of leave it at that as a brief exposition of what happened before we kind of talk about, you know, future moves.
Awesome. I appreciate you sharing that. And I do think that it is important to share the distinction of those. I know I'm definitely going to be getting a couple of refunds that you've graciously offered on a couple of mine. Turns out once you kind of tweaked some of the rendering on that, some of mine had some like spaces in it. So there's like a hashtag that appears at the beginning of it where I guess the space existed that I didn't see when I initially picked it up. I mean, the cost was pretty negligible. It wasn't something that I was going all in on by any means on the alts anyway. But I think having more clarity and nuance around that space will be important moving forward.
Yeah, totally. And if you're curious at all, Anthony, Namebase's co-founder and CTO, actually just joined, and this is his first Clubhouse call, as far as I'm aware, that he's joining. So welcome, Anthony. Super appreciate you joining.
Yeah, bring him up on. Raise your hand, and then we can bring you up on stage if
there's like. I'm inviting him right now.
Okay, great.
Awesome. And Anthony, you know, if you have any technical
questions, can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah. Perfect.
Awesome. Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and just for some context, we were talking about the Puny Code change, and I was sharing how you know, we basically had to move quickly because we realized that every hour that we waited, more and more of these alt Punico names were being purchased. And so we kind of deployed that change really quickly just to make it really straightforward for the end users and so that there's no confusion. And then now that there's kind of some breathing room, we're discussing, you know, what are some good alternatives? What are some good solutions for moving forward? Because, you know, there is some interesting use cases there as like a, you know, almost like a meme Punico name, like the Dogecoin to Handshake names. But, you know, we're just discussing that right as you joined on.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, definitely makes sense. I agree with everything you said. It was a really interesting challenge because Unicode and Punicode are just so confusing, and browsers have dealt with this kind of problem for a while.
Yeah, it's really interesting because there's so much possibility in terms of what you can do with Unicode domain names, right? And that's what Punicode goes from. It goes from alphanumeric encoding to a Unicode representation. But the challenge is that DNS wasn't really initially built with Unicode in mind. And then when it started supporting it, Unicode has so many diverse different characters, and a lot of the characters actually look really similar to like normal letters. And so you have all sorts of complexity around, oh, you know, potential phishing attacks or just, you know, scams and whatnot, and just general confusion. And it's really interesting because, you know, browsers support that, but they've kind of had to always do this cat and mouse. That's why even though you have the Punicode renderer that this library that we previously used basically would get 50 million downloads per month, and it's very, very popular. Even though that's there, browsers actually only support a subset of that just because, you know, they want to prevent confusion on to the end users for entering these domains. So it's just like, even though it's so simple in concept, the actual like emergent properties of it and how you need to kind of deal with the Punicode names, it's actually fairly complex.
Yeah, and to make the matter even more complicated, there's this weird sort of relationship that the browsers sort of have with the registrars. So some of these things are restricted at the level of the browser where, oh, maybe Chrome just won't happen to render a certain Punicode string as Unicode. But there have also been some responsibility on part of the registrar to not even allow for registration of certain kinds of Punicode strings if they know that it would conflict. And in many cases, up to the registrar to decide those kinds of things. So when you read through the, you know, the documentation and these different like technical articles explaining like, oh, here are the issues with Punicode and like here's how we can sort of address these conflicts. There's a lot of discussion about, oh, here's what the registrar should do instead, and here's all the problems that can happen. So one fun anecdote I can share is maybe like a year or so ago, I bought this. I might still own it actually. It was basically AOL.com, but the L was a kind of like a fake L, like one of those like Punicode type things. Then I could set up email on that, so I can get you know, whatever like AOL.com email that I would want, and it would look pretty similar. And if you were just skimming, you wouldn't really notice. I never used this for anything malicious, of course, just to sort of proof of concept. But what was really interesting to see is, at some point, months after I'd registered this, it suddenly stopped resolving in Chrome so that I couldn't even access the website. It would say, this is certainly a phishing site. We're not even going to let you access this. I've never seen that error before. So it's like really strange how seriously the browsers take these kinds of Unicode conflicts.
Yeah, and that's a valid attack vector and a valid concern for that. I've definitely seen some, you know, like Unicode renderings or Punicode renderings of like Facebook or Google that were floating around the marketplace at one point. I'm not really sure where those ended up, but I do see eventually browsers kind of evolving to develop a whitelist, so to speak, of the valid Punicode and to ensure that there's not any malicious use being used for those. I am curious, though. I've noticed that there haven't been any of the official Punicode emojis being used in the registrar program. Is that something that would even be available or possible, Diashan?
Yeah, there actually is one. I think it was like a Chinese character one. And it was something that was done on a fairly ad hoc basis, and I forget which one that was pulled up, but it's definitely something
Boku, I saw blog, I believe.
Gateway.io. I think that was it.
Boku, yeah.
Yeah, so you can see it. Great, thank you, Mike. That's super helpful that you knew that. Top of mind. But yeah, because you know it is possible to support them, and so we definitely will go and support them. Probably we'll need to have a little bit more consideration before launching just any, you know, Panini code TLD, but it's definitely possible and definitely feasible.
And was it, I think when I checked into the hosting with Kinsta, it was possible to have it as the top level domain, but not second level. Does that sound accurate, or do you know if the, like a second level emoji would also be supported in that situation? So could someone, like, for instance, hand register at 101 or gateway and emoji dot emoji?
You know, I actually don't know off the top of mind how that would work. I think you need to check in the browser and try entering in, you know, the emoji dot emoji and see how that renders. And it might actually differ per browser. So that's definitely something to look into.
I've been playing around with this. I can't speak for gateway or registrars, but I've been just manually doing it with the name based DNS, and I've been having better luck with Cloudways as a host for resolving names. I made a guide, if you know, skyinclu.com/cloudways, just to plug that, but it's a free tutorial. But basically, I have like Flamingo Handshake is one of my TLDs, and I made home as emoji SLD dot Flamingo Handshake. And I'm just playing around, but then I think that's on Vercel, I think, right now. Or maybe I moved it to Cloudways. But it resolves in certain browsers. But Chrome doesn't seem to show it in the still shows the XN dash dash on both SLD and TLD from my own testing. But I think it's Safari showed it. I believe Safari showed it. But I tested it in like four or five different browsers. But the Chinese characters actually shows on Chrome. I've tested with Chinese characters. They show. But as far as registering at Gateway, I'm not sure. I saw Anthony speaking too. I hope he has some insights.
Oh, I may have just had my mic on, but just briefly, I was reading that whole, let's call it, like, there's a standard, like, IDNA 2008. It was initially IDNA 2003. This sort of outlined the rules for what sort of Unicode characters and strings were allowed to be rendered in browsers. And then it was upgraded to be much more robust and consistent the IDNA 2008. So I was just reviewing that algorithm earlier today, and I'm pretty sure that it's allowed at the subdomain level. I think they can all get translated, yeah.
Let me go to Gateway now and start registering SLDs and emojis.
Awesome. I have one last question, then we can shift topics here. I know that Mike has some exciting things to share also. Regarding the alt emoji, do you, Tioshan or anybody from Namebase, do you see them having any kind of future at Namebase at all, or not necessarily anything specific, but do you think that the rendering is kind of a permanent feature, a temporary stopgap? What's that look like for the folks in the audience that have some?
Yeah, totally. So it's definitely more, and actually, sorry, is my Wi-Fi connection good?
Yeah, I'm hearing you fine so far.
Okay. So yeah, that was definitely more of a stopgap solution. I know that you know, some people on Twitter and in email, and you know, Mark and I had spoken as well. And there's definitely interesting use cases for the alt emojis. So I think where I'm trending now is you know, support rendering for all of them. We can have a permissive render just because it's useful to be able to see what a Puny code name, even if it's not like a, you know, ID, INA one, you know, what it actually looks like. But then we can have a little signifier on the UI indicating, oh, you know, this is one that is conformant with, you know, a spec that most of the browsers support. And, oh, this is one that's more of a, you know, alt emoji And then basically on the marketplace, when you use the Puni code filter, it'll allow you to, you know, filter just by the INA ones or the alt ones or, you know, the combined, you know, more permissive, all of them. So that's kind of where I think the solution space is, just like directionally. And we'll probably just do that in the near future. This current solution of just like not rendering the alt ones, that was definitely more of a stopgap.
Awesome. I really appreciate you sharing that. And that sounds like a really great solution for that. I think, you know, the using an official Puni code just as kind of an NFT, while a huge flex, would be kind of wasteful of the utility for that. And I'm particularly keen on not wasting any of the, you know, any subset of names within Handshake. And so I think that those definitely have, as you mentioned, like kind of a Dogecoin to the otherwise, to the Handshake ecosystem. They definitely have meme potential and some interesting use cases. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that evolves and that, how new markets can emerge from that. So I appreciate you looking out for the users, making sure that especially the people newer to the space know exactly, you know, what they're getting, making informed decisions, really facilitating that, and also helping to push the space forward. So I appreciate you all for the hard work that you've been for that, and look forward to more updates in the future. And from there, I'll turn it over to Mike. I know that he actually, Mike, if you could, for the folks that haven't had a chance to listen to your interview yet, if you could give us some kind of a summary and takeaways from the interview that you had last week, and as well as the announcement that you shared with me before, that would be great.
Okay, thanks, Mark. Yeah, and just my last input for this emoji. I know some people in the audience, we've actually talked about this in previous, these clubhouses, but I honestly think I thought I was just going to lose some money because I bought some alts too, and I got the email, and I didn't read the whole thing, and I was like, I just thought I was going to kind of like lose that money, you know. Luckily I didn't spend too much that I could lose, but then when I reread it, actually, I missed it, and a couple of my other friends in the space Reddit, we thought originally we were just going to write it off, but actually I think it's really a smart decision. I know it's a big investment Namebase is making for refunding people, or giving them the opportunity to refund if they want to. I think that's, you know, as a startup that they're doing, I think it's the right thing, and I think it's really important for it's a blockchain. Handshake is a blockchain. I put it on Twitter as a reply to your post about this, Mark, and I think it's all about trust, right? Whether it's NFTs or domains, you know, the platform Namebase, as well as the whole Handshake blockchain, is all about trust. So I also was wondering, do these people know what they're buying? If only we could know. So anyways, I think it's the right move. It must be a hard one for them. You know, Namebase here, I know we have the co-founders here on the call too, which is amazing. You know, I think it's the right decision for sure to help deal with that issue right now.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, as a startup, I think the most important is the trust, you know, long term, and the brand. So it's must have been a hard one, but I think it was the right one. Okay. Yeah. So last, actually almost a week ago, I did a interview with Jahan. Jahan is how he pronounces his name. I know we're all learning about name pronunciations. But Jahan's an investor in Namebase, is also a early stage. Also, I don't want to say it totally incorrectly, but he was part of the inception of Handshake, I believe. Maybe Taisha might be able to correct me, but he's basically been, you know, since the beginning of Handshake, involved and a big supporter. So I was really honored to be able to get his accepting to be interviewed on my podcast, which is Global from Asia, which is not exactly a normal podcast about crypto. We've had some blockchain and Bitcoin discussions, but yeah, he came on, and it's on globalfromasia.com/NFT as a domain. If anybody, it's on video and audio format in iTunes. And the topic was, of course, about the sale. I think Ryan's on this. I see him in the audience, I think. So Ryan will be on in a few days on the show. So we're gonna have him as the second show. But we talked about the sale of, or him buying NFT TLD for the $84,000 USDC, and how the deal went down a little bit. Ryan will also share his side in a couple of days. It's already been recorded. And it was just the whole, as an investor, he's very bullish on the whole space. He was kind of saying some very bold statements about traditional ICANN domains maybe being disrupted. There was some really amazing quotes. I would recommend, it's about a 45-minute interview. And then during the actual interview, I said, you know, because he actually has, I believe it's an auctioneer license. He's worked at Sotheby's in the past, which is a broker clearinghouse for auctions of art. He did that for many years. He's also got a technical background. So in the actual interview, I said, hey, you know, I envision you as like doing these events where you're auctioning names and they're, you know, like people are coming in, because he's in Hong Kong, I'm in China. I thought it would be like an offline event where there's these high class, like, investors coming into this room and there's like names on the screen and there's like a you know, the gavel, you know, like, and he's like, let's do it. All right, let's do it. On the actual recording, some people. So basically the announcement is we're going to do it. Taishan's already knows about it, giving the thumbs up. We're calling it HandyCon. And we already got a really fast site up at handycon.promote on Handshake or .hns.2. We're talking, it's going to be a 2-day event. It might be a little bit difficult for the European people to attend, but if they're late at night, it'll be about this time. It'll be March 11th and 12th, San Francisco time, 3 p.m. San Francisco time for 4 hours until 7 p.m. San Francisco time or PST Pacific time. So you do your own adjustments. It'll be my mornings in Hong Kong. And it'll be speaker format. Well, we're going to stream it on this Clubhouse, but we're also going to use AirMeet. I have a subscription on their software for video and, you know, presentation mode. So it'll be speakers. We're still talking. There's so many amazing people in this community, but we're trying to involve as many people as possible to do this. 4 speakers per day with a panel. And then we're trying to figure out some kind of maybe auction process as well. Maybe either before or after, or some kind of networking maybe. So that's our big announcement. I've been having a few calls with him, and there's been some others here that have been hearing about it. But this is really the first time we've really made it public. So open to any kind of feedback, and that's the big announcement, at least for me.
Yeah, Mike, great announcement. Quick correction. I'm pretty sure Jiang wasn't involved in the inception of Handshake. Actually, if you look at the, there's a CoinDesk article that was used to kind of announce Handshake, and they kind of credit the creators. It was Joseph Poon, Andrew Lee from PIA, Andrew Lee from Purse, and then Christopher Jeffrey, and they're kind of the people who are on the official, you know, PR launch. But he was definitely super, super early into the community and definitely a huge proponent of it. And I think it's really amazing that he has such a deep background in art auctions and just, you know, the fine art world in general. He definitely brings a lot of legitimacy to the space, and also just in terms of experience, right? It's really hard to value art and set some sort of price for, you know, fine art to trade. And I think it's kind of a similar dynamic for names, right? Each name is so unique. How do you actually value it? So definitely having someone like him in the community, and then also just, you know, going and doing one of those auctions at the first community organized Handshake conference, I think that's going to be super powerful. So I'm very excited about it.
Thank you.
That is super exciting. I'm sorry, Mike, are you going to add something?
No, I'm still trying to get used to this Clubhouse etiquette, but I'm ready for any other feedback or topic.
Oh, no, I just wanted to clarify, from what I heard there, you said it was going to be March, you say 11th and 12th on Clubhouse?
We're in these time zone differences, so I still think and live in Asia time, but we're, of course, welcoming the, you know, so it's going to be a Wednesday, March 10th and 11th U.S. time or European time, 11th and 12th Hong Kong or Asia time. Again, we tried our best. I mean, maybe things could even change if there's enough feedback, but it's a 3 p.m. San Francisco time, which is a couple of hours earlier than this call, for Wednesday and Thursday, which would be Thursday and Friday in Hong Kong or Asia. So we're trying. And in Europe, I mean, Europe, it'll be pretty late at night on, I'm still trying to adjust all these times, but we do have the website and we're going to update it as best we can. It's really brand new, literally like a week ago we did the interview, and then during the interview we talked about it and we did a couple calls. But we want to just move fast. I mean, there's a lot of momentum happening in this community, and we want to, you know, try to involve as many people in the community as possible. But yeah, we're moving pretty fast. But that, so it's 10th and 11th US time in the afternoons, late afternoon.
Awesome. Well, I will definitely be able to make it on the 11th and look forward to that. And what was the site for that once more on Handshake?
Yeah, handycon.promote. And then, yeah, you could add .hns.2 to that if you don't have a resolver. It's a simple one-page site. You know, we'll be adding a link for people to apply to be a speaker. Of course, we have many amazing speakers. There's no speakers yet announced formally. It's so brand new. So yeah, of course we'll have more updates, hopefully early next week with a more complete site with more kind of a structure, but that's the main point. And it'll be recorded and with video, and then we'll put that all, it's totally free. We already actually have some sponsors stepping up, which is amazing. But it's a little bit still too early to announce like sponsors or speakers, but that's hopefully by early next week. And anybody here is more than welcome to be part of this. It's a community driven event.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that, and definitely when the site and announcement details are fleshed out, we'll just plaster that on the Namebase website and try to drive as many people in the community to it. And just one quick meta comment, something that I really appreciate about the Handshake community, and it was fairly deliberate because, you know, for context, there was a Handshake Foundation at one point, and that was run by Joseph Poon and Andrew Lee and the other Andrew Lee. And it was created to raise the money from all the investors. They raised $10.2 million in total. They gave away every cent of that $10.2 million. They donated to, you know, Apache, the Free Software Foundation, GNU, EFF, etc. So they gave all the money away, just to kind of give back to a lot of the really core internet organizations that help push the internet forward. And then it was basically just funded out of pocket just to go and launch the protocol. And then once the protocol was launched, the foundation actually just completely dissolved. And that was done deliberately so that there would be no single, you know, like founder, CEO of Handshake leading the charge. It was, the foundation kind of took a step back and dissolved so that the community could form around it and become strong. And it kind of took a bit for that to play out, right? I know we're a year in now, versus, you know, maybe things might have moved faster if there was like an official foundation pushing things forward initially. But now what we have is this decentralized community where we have individuals like yourself, Mike, and Mark, and everyone else in the community. You know, we're all directors of Handshake. And everyone gets to push it forward. And that ultimately just creates such a strong community. There is a bit of like a slow start, but I think that this is really one of the strongest community in crypto, and definitely in the naming space. So I'm really excited about it, just because it's kind of not only a first for Handshake in terms of having a community run organization, but it's also a signifier of just the strength of the community and the maturity of the community now. Yeah, so it's just super exciting.
Yeah, it absolutely is, Tioshan, and actually it's kind of funny. I have weekly calls with, and sometimes more than weekly calls with people in the community that, I probably speak with them more than some friends and family that I've been keeping in touch with, just because we're so connected to the space and are keeping up on, you know, what's happening in the marketplace or what names we're going after, what we're doing within the space. And I'm really starting to make what I think are going to be some lifelong friends within the space, which is something I was kind of hoping for but not really anticipating. And that's been just a really encouraging indicator to me overall of the cohesiveness of the early community. I also want to welcome Greg to the stage, which is the CEO of Akash Network, which is going to be absolutely critical to the overall Web3 and web space, and I think is going to have a lot of momentum with Handshake moving forward. So thank you for joining us, Greg.
Hey, thanks, Mark. I do have a question. I mean, I love Handshake community. I was actually a big fan when I learned that the funds that Handshake Foundation raised from a recent Olympic VCs were given back to the, you know, web organizations. That's when that sparked my interest in Handshake. So I love that aspect, but also the reality, you know, on the ground, especially with liquidity and incentivizing, marketing, or for lack of a better word, right, kind of requires that sort of like centralized leadership in the early days of a project. So I think where Handshake is struggling, I could be wrong, but how can we address the exchange liquidity problem, right? How can we get Handshake into centralized exchanges like, you know, let's say Binance or Coinbase?
Greg, that's a great question, and you'll be pleased to learn. I think it was announced in the last Clubhouse, or maybe it was the Clubhouse on Monday. But there is a community-run, Handshake DWeb Foundation springing up, and it's started by community members to push Handshake forward. And so, to the extent that having people band together to spearhead Handshake, and to the extent that you kind of need a counterparty for deals sometimes, that is something that is emerging. And it is just completely community run, volunteer run. So that's really exciting. And I think the liquidity problem is really interesting. To an extent, adding exchanges should help. But, we recently started up this OTC operation just to help people who are trying to get into Handshake, right, be able to get the H&S that they need, because the more people with H&S, right, the more supporters you have for the ecosystem. And it's fascinating because like a lot of larger holders of H&S, they kind of just have diamond hands. They really believe in the protocol. And so there isn't really anyone trying to do a quick flip, which is, great because they have conviction in the protocol, but actually it's kind of like a blessing and a curse. You have this sort of like sell side liquidity price crisis, at least until I guess the price rises, which it has been doing recently. So I think for that one, it's really just a matter of, one, potentially just like adding more exchanges, but also, as more H&S gets mined, that can get into more hands. And then also just in terms of getting more of existing holders, comfortable with, maybe letting go of a little bit of their H&S so that they can bring newcomers into the space. But it's definitely like a really interesting challenge. It's not something that's, very trivial, because there isn't, there aren't any huge bag holders who are just like trying to sell their holdings.
Right. So that's another problem, right? And sometimes to get more awareness, some of the methods that are known to have a lot of success is using tokens as incentives to invoke certain game theoretical, game mechanical elements, right? One of the things that in Cosmos chains, most of them have is the idea of a community pool, where a certain portion of the mining rewards go to the community pool, which then is subjected to governance in terms of who these funds need to be distributed with. So recent action in Cosmos marketing play, where they spend about a million atoms to incentivize influencers or incentivize folks to learn more about Cosmos, right? Who's spearheading the economic side of Handshake?
Greg, I'm sorry. What do you mean by who's spearheading the economic side of Handshake?
Or is there a working group that's responsible for proposing, making economic proposals to the protocol, or how are you evolving the protocol? I suppose is my question.
Sorry, I kind of just phased out at the very end. How are you what?
How is the development happening? I mean, how do we evolve the protocol? Are there any proposals to improve?
Great question. Yeah, so basically the way it's happening is a lot of passionate community members are now stepping up. So, for example, just in January 2021, so literally just last month, Mike Carson, who's been a very early Handshake advocate, and he was really big in domaining for .io domains. He runs a company called Park.io. He just started a company, Impervious, that actually helps to employ Matt Zipkin, who's one of the protocol developers. And so now they're doing a lot of development at a more lower level. And that's something that's literally just starting up now. So I think to the extent that protocol development needs to happen, it's kind of an experiment to see like how much the community steps up to support Handshake. And from what I've seen so far, like that is actually happening. And we're seeing that play out now where people are kind of coming in and stepping up and pushing the protocol forward. You know, there's even one of the community members, Handshake Jesus, who's been making really, really amazing name gifts to new members, to bring new members into the community. I think he might have gifted .cash to you. And a lot of these names are actually like fairly expensive names. So he's really living up to his moniker. Yep. But basically, we're kind of seeing this as like, okay, this is the experiment where will the community be able to step up? Right now, I'm seeing a lot of community members actually step up. But it's also like, you know, Impervious, for example, just started a month ago. Right. So it's like we're kind of early in it to be able to call out all the results so far. And then also the community-run DWeb Foundation, that's something that is still just starting up, right? It's like hasn't even gone live. I know Handshake, Jesse or maybe someone else mentioned it just you know, earlier this week. So like a lot of these things are kind of forming. And that goes back to my previous point where having this really decentralized model, it creates a really slow start. But my thesis is that ultimately it makes for an even stronger community than would normally be possible with like a centralized foundation, and we're starting to kind of see that play out.
That's awesome. That's really good to hear. Yeah, I'd love to make contribute to economics and that side of things, and it's also we're just getting started with the decentralized cloud foundation. A decentralized web foundation should be friends.
Yeah, 100%. I think there's definitely a ton of collaboration, you know, especially when you can pair like a Handshake, a static website, right? You're trying to do something dynamic, leveraging a cache for that, right? I think has a lot of really interesting possibilities. I haven't really seen anyone do it yet, but I think that, you know, once we have some example apps, maybe someone should create them. It'll really open up a lot of interesting possibilities.
Yeah, so we got the Handshake domain name for Akash. And one of the things that I'm looking or exploring further is having applications that deploy on Akash, anybody that deploy on Akash, be able to make DNS changes or add an entry into a subdomain under Akash, right? So that'd be a really cool way to like guarantee and programmatically create these subdomains or like, and you know, really show the power behind a programmable domain name system. If you look at Handshake as a different view, I'm really excited about integrating the Akash domain and overall in Handshake in general with Akash. March 8th is our mainnet 2 going live, so after that we're going to explore a little more deeper into the integration.
Yeah, it's a really exciting idea, programmatically assigning those domain names.
Right. I mean, I assume there are multi-sig capability for Handshake domains.
Yep.
For Handshake keys, and it's just going to be a threshold signature scheme or something we can deploy.
Yeah. One of the trends that I was just on a podcast with Nick Carter, and we were talking about this because they at Castle Island they have this whole thesis around the D web. And we're talking about some of these emerging trends, and it's really interesting because in order to usually create like a new technology, like for example, Bitcoin, right? Like there were attempts at digital currency in the past, there was Bitcoin, Bitgold and other ones. And then it wasn't until Satoshi Nakamoto basically got the technology just right, got the mechanics just right, that Bitcoin was possible. But not only that, but Bitcoin was launched in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, where there's this cultural zeitgeist that kind of made Bitcoin relatable and relevant for people. So you needed the technological maturity and that zeitgeist. And then now in 2021, we're seeing this similar trend for the D web, where not only are all these decentralized web protocols literally just like just launching and becoming usable, right? We have Handshake, we have Skynet, we have the Cache, we have IPFS, we have Filecoin, you know, things that were kind of in development for literally years, all kind of going live at the same time and becoming functional. But also we're seeing such crazy events happening in the centralized internet that are basically just breaking down, right? We got Trump getting deplatformed, we have Parler getting shut off across the entire internet stack, we have Wall Street Bets, we have GameStop, all of this stuff is happening at once, and suddenly there's this huge pull towards decentralization. And the way I see it, we have these two trends basically emerging, where it's like the technology is actually becoming mature enough to build these decentralized applications, and then culturally, the need has never been stronger. And I think that that's something that is super exciting. So like the fact that Cash is taking a look at integrating with Handshake, I think that's going to be super cool. I know another team, Fleek, they do like static website deployments on IPFS, and they're actually integrating Handshake support as well. So we're kind of, you know, in 2021, I think we're going to see a lot of super cool things. I'm really excited to play around with all of them.
Yeah, if you're not in crypto or D-Web right now, I don't know where, what else are you doing with your life. It's so much exciting stuff, especially like Amazon or AWS going down every other month. You know, you see this AWS down events that take down most of exchanges in crypto. I think D-Web will start off as a really good alternative and a really good like failover to begin with, because of the resiliency it provides to, you know, becoming a mainstream and potentially replacing the incumbents. I'm really excited that the whole D-Web space is having a Cambrian explosion.
What kind of use cases do you see? I mean, once Akash and Handshake are more deeply integrated, what kind of unique use cases do you think that could grow from that?
So the first use case I can think of is unstoppable applications, right? So censorship resistant, you know, self-sovereign applications. First thing, what Akash is, it's an unstoppable cloud where you can't effectively, no one can take down your application that doesn't have access to the key. So only the key holders can operate on the application in terms of deployments and whatnot. But a provider running your application can choose to kick you out, right? They can choose to not serve you in case they feel like it. So in that event, you know, the system will go find another host that will host your application, right? So there's a change in the IP address because it's a new computer. So when that change happens, you will have a service interruption. In that change happens, I like to see the domain name automatically get updated to whatever domain name that you serve your customers in. Now you can't, that's going to be hard to do that in a centralized way because the DNS provider and on top of that, the domain provider can effectively shut you down, right? But on a Handshake, there's no one can stop you. So I think in a scenario like that, you can truly build unstoppable services all the way from domain to compute to extend that to storage with Skynet. Right? The entire stack can be built on these three, on the D-Web effect, essentially.
That's a fascinating use case. And does anyone on stage have anything else to add to something that they envision happening with that that kind of collaboration?
Yeah, I think when it comes to using Handshake with Kosh specifically, because there are other potential use cases as well, but I wouldn't be surprised if one of the first breakout applications on Handshake uses a Kosh. And Greg, I'm not just saying that because you're on stage right now. I've actually thought about this, and like here's just one application. For example, oftentimes streaming sites, they are very easy to start up, and they actually get a ton of users very, very quickly. But inevitably they kind of run into some sort of like content issue, and they actually just ended up getting taken down either at the domain level or at the server level, and that is an application where, like, literally, if you create a streaming site, it's like not crazy to have like a few million users very, very quickly. The thing is, you just can't really scale because you'll run into issues with that eventually. So I wouldn't be surprised if someone, you know, an enterprising engineer somewhere around the world just goes and creates a streaming site that just like suddenly gets 20 million users. And now you literally have, you know, 20 million people using Handshake and Akash. And I think that that is like there's a non-trivial chance that something like that happens.
Yeah, true that. That's a really good use case, actually, now thinking about it. And other possibilities are like, I think just content, you know, like blogs and discussion forums and whatnot. You know, so Akash provides this dynamic layer, right? So Skynet provides the static layer, and Akash provides the dynamic layer where you have authentication and you can have like this entire database essentially running. And you know, so Skynet will do the archival, data storage, and data retrieval. Akash can do the dynamic side of the applications, and Handshake can do the discovery side of the applications, right? So you have this entire full stack essentially. And the possibilities are endless if you think about it. You can do anything and one of the amazing things about Akash is the ability to like rapidly provision and deprovision applications, right? So it gives you that level of programmability that's not possible on the cloud today. Cloud is imposing limits and you can have all kinds of like limitations. Whereas Akash makes the querying for parameters, both in terms of like performance as well as location or whatnot. It also makes it extremely programmable to do all kinds of things. So you can do like hyper privacy preserving applications where you can effectively do encrypted chat rooms, like multi-way chats are very, encrypted chats are very, very hard to do. So you can do stuff like that because you can have like a chat room, just a server or a container just for a certain room that's programmatically, you know, provisioned. And things like that, yeah, it's just endless possibilities.
Now, let me see if I'm understanding this correctly, because one of the ways that I've been thinking about Web3 and DWeb in general is kind of a shift of an order of magnitude. So in the same way that you might go to, you know, GoDaddy and, you know, buy a website, you can go to Namebase, you can buy a whole top-level domain, like we're shifting the possibilities up an order of magnitude. And I know, Tia Shen, and between that and what you've said, Greg, it sounds like between the scalability, the compute, and the immutability of these sites, could it be possible for someone to, instead of spinning up a personal website, they could theoretically spin up an entire network like YouTube that could service the same kind of throughput as some of the major incumbents in the space? So is that an accurate representation of the kind of collaboration potential there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So right now on March 8th, the launch partners for Akash, the compute partners that are providing the majority of the compute, is Equinix. So Equinix is the largest interconnected data center network in the world. They have about 1,800 sites and about 1,800 data centers and about 200 regions. And they provide data center capacity to Amazon. So if you want to transfer one data from one region of Amazon or AWS to another, you go through Equinix. So what Akash is doing essentially is allowing someone like Equinix, which is a source and you know the interconnected network behind Amazon's and Google's and Microsoft's, to directly offer the services at 40% lower cost, right? So that's the kind of stuff that decentralization truly enables, and these guys can provide hyper low latency. Like in California alone, they can provide 5 millisecond latency between LA and San Francisco. So if you're like thinking about next generation voice applications, right, you want that level of latency, or any streaming application, as a matter of fact, you want that kind of latency. And you want to be able to query for that kind of latency and schedule your workload such a way. So I think decentralization is going to open up a lot of these use cases that were not possible before.
That is super entertaining to me. I've had one of the names that I picked up early on at Namebase was .floof. And I was kind of joking with my wife and son that I wanted to create a site called fluffs.floof and use it as a aggregator of the cutest pet videos on TikTok and other platforms. And so I'm just imagining like creating basically an entire, you know, like YouTube for just pet videos. And that's the kind of just, I don't know, like abstraction, that I think can excite a lot of people, of, especially if it's as easy as setting up a D-Link, or at least remotely. So, I mean, I'm sure initially it won't be, and, you know, the early adopters are going to create some really amazing, products and have that first mover advantage. But I think ultimately, if we can get to a point where somebody is able to create that kind of scalable network, just as easily, that would be, kind of, to use Elon's razor, the most entertaining outcome is the most probable. And I think that'll really help grow the space overall. You know, it starts kind of as a toy. And to circle back around, Greg, to one of your previous questions about the liquidity of HNS, correct me if I'm wrong, anybody on stage, but isn't Handshake compatible with Coinbase Rosetta project? Is that something that we might see some progress on in the coming year or so?
Yeah, I think I'm not super familiar with the details, but I think it is. So theoretically, that should make it easier for Coinbase to actually go and support Handshake. And Coinbase did actually go and mention in a previous blog post that Handshake was one of the protocols that they're considering listing. Although, you know, with that kind of thing, it's always just, they keep it really hush-hush, so it's always fairly unknown what they're going to list, when they're going to list it. But definitely, that is something that should make it easier for, you know, exchanges to support it.
And one of another project that I found to be very interesting in the DWeb space, and it's just getting its legs, is Sentinel. It's a VPN network. But what's interesting about the network is it's also a bandwidth marketplace. So if you're doing anything video related, right, on the internet, your biggest challenge will be to find bandwidth, cheap bandwidth. To give you a context, Gangnam Style for Google cost them over $500 million because they were not located appropriately in one of the data centers in Texas or something. Just the data transfer cost from east to west costed them about $500 million. So your biggest challenge for YouTube for cats is going to be bandwidth. And there's just so much bandwidth available in the open that people don't use. Like my friends at Twitch, they bought the bandwidth marketplace is just super terrible. It's run by a bunch of telcos, right? So they're supposed to like buy bandwidth ahead of time. And if you don't use it, you lose it. So it's a ubiquitous amount of bandwidth lying around, and there's no marketplace for it. But I think Sentinel is kind of looking into that space, and I think whoever nails the bandwidth marketplace is going to do really well. And I want that to be a decentralized network.
That's interesting. So, Greg, how does the bandwidth work in the cache network? Like, is it just the source is handling that, or?
Yeah, so providers that handle it, they're supposed to price in the bid for you, right? Bid for the bandwidth, and we have a renegotiation protocol mechanism. If your bandwidth exceeds too much, you renegotiate the lease. It's not super optimized. We're still working on how to price the bandwidth. It's a super complicated problem, actually. But right now there's a ceiling and a renegotiation.
Gigahertz. Like those are specific frequencies of radio waves that everyone in the world kind of has to agree is going to be on that band. And the reason everyone has to agree is if you're just walking around outside and everyone's using all sorts of different kinds of frequencies, but now the microwave in the house across the street might start interfering with your, you know, AirPods connection to your phone. So it's something that people take very seriously, and the FCC tries to go and find like people that are emitting like illegal radiation that's in bandwidths that they're not supposed to be emitting. So this is big, complicated auction every like number of years in all these like different places in the world in order to figure out, all right, AT&T gets to use this bandwidth for these kinds of cell towers and these devices. It's like many like millions of dollars on these things, and the auction system and the game theory around that is just insane and like so absurdly complicated. But it's one example of, I guess, just to like paint a picture of like why it's so complicated. Let's say that I'm a certain kind of company that requires a certain size of bandwidth, but I don't really care where it is. So maybe that can be in the gigahertz range, maybe that can be in the 500 megahertz range. All I really care about is that I get something. So I'm pretty agnostic to the package. But let's say that if I got 500 megahertz, I really don't want 700 megahertz. So maybe there's weird arbitrary constraints here. So it's really, really hard to encode people's preferences, and that sort of is where the complexity comes from. So the reason I'm spending so long talking about this is it turns out this is, in my opinion, the exact problem people have with names on Handshake, which is you have a finite amount of money and you want a whole bunch of names, and some of these names are being auctioned at the same time, and you don't have the money to bid on all of the names you would like concurrently. So there's a weird issue here because you have to do this little dance where you figure out where do you put your money, like how many coins do you put in each name, given that the auction is going to conclude in a few days. And there is, like, people have thought about the game theory, that exact kind of, like, auction system a lot. It just turns out the answer is not at all something a person can think about, and it's something that takes, you know, even, like, the government, like, so long to figure out. So the auction system the Handshake does have is something that's easy for people to think about and still pretty good.
Yeah, the auctions and the game theories, I think it's just, like, a fascinating subject. It's always so cool to see the different auctions types.
All right, for the recording, I'm sorry, everybody. As I said, I have a one-hour session. I can only do 1 hour today. I hope someone else is maybe recording, but I have other things to do. But thank you again. This is a MP3.mastermind on Handshake. Mike, see you also at the handycon.promote event. Mark Smith just confirmed he'll be a speaker. It's going to be a great one. We're going to make some history here. Thank you, everybody.